And now, for a rousing union song from the Little Red Songbook of the IWW, There Is Power in a Union, the Billy Bragg version.
There's power in a factory, power in the land, power in the hands of the worker. But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand. There is power in a union. Now the lessons of the past we all learned with workers' blood. The mistakes of the bosses we must pay for. From the cities and the farmlands to trenches full of mud, war has always been the boss's way, sir. The Union forever defending our rights. Down with the Black Lake, all workers unite. With our brothers and our sisters in many far-off lands, there is power in a union. Now I long for the morning that they realize brutality and unjust laws cannot defeat us. But who'll defend the workers who cannot organize when the bosses send their lackeys out to cheat us? Money speaks for money, the devil for his own. Who comes to speak for the skin and the bone? What a comfort to the widow, a light to the child. There is power in a union.
Spectrum. Welcome. You are listening to the WOB Radio Hour, a production of the Tacoma South Sound Industrial Workers of the World. We are organized along industries rather than crafts. Mm-hmm. We were founded in 1905. We're going to do a short introduction to the people sitting around the table producing this show today. And first we have Noah.
Mm-hmm. I use he, him pronouns.
And Lynn.
Hi, Lynn. I use she and her. Mm.
Gordon. I'm a fellow worker. Gordon, I'm from Bremerton, but part of the Tacoma branch, and I use he, him, and fellow worker.
Oh, Sean from the Seattle branch, and I use fellow worker or he, him.
Alan, Tacoma, he, him.
Mm-hmm. Marilyn, and I am a fellow worker, and I'm a they.
Alrighty. And so, just like Marilyn said, we organize across all different industries. We're an industrial union, which means that no matter what skill or trade or craft you work in, the IWW welcomes you in and helps you organize your workplace no matter what your needs are and no matter what you face in terms of what you're dealing with in terms of your management or working conditions or pay struggles and things like that. Thank you all for joining us today. We have a whole lineup of material here today, starting with the labor report. We're also going to be talking about the history of Labor Day versus May Day and a whole slew of other local goings-on and educational pieces from the IWW.
Thank you, Noah. And Noah also wanted to remind people that even if you're currently not working at a paid position, if you are not part of the hiring and firing management, you are welcome within the IWW. I'm going to read a section out of the preamble. It explains a little bit more about us.
Take it away.
The working class and the employing class have nothing in common. There could be no peace so long as hunger and want are found among millions of the working people, and the few who make up the employing class have all the good things of life. We find that centering of the management of industries into fewer and fewer hands makes the trade unions unable to cope with the ever-growing power of the employing class. These conditions can be changed and the interest of the working class upheld only by an organization formed in such a way that all its members in any one industry, or in all industries if necessary, cease work whenever a strike or a lockout is on in any department thereof, thus making an injury to one an injury to all.
Thank you so much. And we will also be providing a Spanish translation of that section from another fellow worker who could not be with us today, fellow worker Miguel.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Soy el compañero Miguel y estás escuchando WOB Radio Hour del Sindicato Laboral Trabajadores Industriales del Mundo, viniendo directo desde Tacoma, Washington. Y hoy voy a leer un poco del preámbulo del IWW. El preámbulo es el documento de fundación y declaración de los principios y visiones de la IWW. Comenzamos. La clase obrera y la clase patronal no tienen nada en común. Paz no puede existir mientras los trabajadores pasen hambre y deseen una mejor calidad de vida, y sabiendo de los pocos, que son la clase patronal, que tienen todas las cosas buenas de la vida. Entre estas dos clases, la lucha debe continuar hasta que los trabajadores del mundo se organicen como una clase, tomen posesión de los medios de producción, abolir el sistema de salarios y vivan en armonía con la tierra. Creemos que la centralización de la gestión de las industrias cada día en menos manos deja a los sindicatos incapaces de enfrentar al siempre creciente poder de la clase patronal. Estas condiciones pueden cambiar y el interés de la clase obrera apoyando solamente por una organización formada de tal manera que todos sus miembros de cualquier industria o de todas las industrias, si es necesario, paren el trabajo cuando haya una huelga o cierre patronal en cualquier departamento. Por lo que sí, si nos tocan a uno, nos tocan a todos. Gracias.
And as always, starting up at the very top of our show in terms of the content we have planned for you today, we are going to be giving a brief labor report of labors going on here in the Sound as well as all across the country. Perhaps one of the biggest stories that's currently coming up now is a upcoming strike that is anticipated to happen with UPS drivers and package handlers. Many of them have been facing safety issues such as poor heating and cooling in UPS delivery trucks, stagnation of pay, as well as a desire for increased wages, of course, but especially the safety of drivers and package handlers is definitely on the line here. The last time the UPS went on strike was in 1997, and that strike only lasted 2 weeks before management decided to settle with workers' grievances at the negotiating table. UPS, obviously, is a package handling and transportation company that's been around for quite some time. They're organized with the Teamsters, and their new president, who was elected, whose name I do not immediately have on me. Hold on just a second. We will have to edit that. Here we go. Current president Sean O'Brien definitely seems to be a character who seems to be a little bit more militant about meeting his workers' needs. And so they're really hoping that hopefully it won't come to a strike. But if they do, as it's anticipated, we're talking about a strike that is going to affect up to 6% of the United States GDP just by freezing that section of the transportation sector alone. So they have a lot of leverage in terms of rank and file worker power there, and hopefully that will get them and their grievances met. The workers, I mean. So, yeah, that's quite the story, honestly. We also had another strike of a similar size like this that was supposed to happen, which was the rail workers' strike. I believe that was in the Northeast United States.
It is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this strike, along with the rail workers' strike, kind of show that there are these larger labor actions that are continuing to be taken. Obviously, with strikes numbering employees potentially up to the hundreds of thousands at a time, we're talking about labor actions that could potentially really solidify and continue to advance the causes of the labor movement in this country, because both the rail workers and especially the UPS workers really do help transport a lot of material goods, but also a lot of the profits generated by the companies that run those industries. So, all solidarity to them, honestly. This is probably one of the biggest labor stories to come out. It might end up being one of the biggest strikes in U.S. history as of late. Teamsters President Sean O'Brien said in a May 2022 speech, "We're going to strike hard, we're going to strike fast, and we're going to demand what we're worth." This is also coinciding with a bunch of other labor actions currently taking place in the United States. Starbucks recently just unionized its 200th store, and that union wave continues to grow. The Chipotle union of Chipotle restaurant workers is also beginning to advance as well. The company has previously closed down one of its first locations as a direct result of... let me correct myself here. Chipotle shut down one of its restaurants, which was the first to vote on a union and succeed in an attempt to prevent any kind of unionization occurring within its company. Starbucks has done the same with several Seattle stores here in the South Sound. So it seems despite all of the profit and all of the anti-union crackdowns by a lot of these major industries and companies here in the country. It seems like a lot of these rank and file workers are really digging into the trenches and really holding out for what they need in order to live. So that is a pretty substantial development on the labor front. Any comments?
Yeah, I was reading a magazine that I really love. It's called Yes Magazine. Mm-hmm. It's out of the Northwest here, out of, I think, Seattle now. And their whole issue is on labor this month. Mm-hmm. So I would strongly suggest the listener to try to get their hands on this month's Yes Magazine. But I was reading a report by a Starbucks worker in Denver. And when the forest fires got really bad there, mm-hmm. a lot of businesses shut down. So temporarily. So what this worker found is that with the her job shut down, she had time to step back and really think about how the environmental issues affected her at work in terms of heat in the building and their lack of protection from excess heat. Mm-hmm. And what they really wanted. So she found that that was an ideal time to start organizing, and she was able to unionize her Starbucks in Denver as a result of that. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about the environment and climate, we're also talking about the working environment for people. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but that's just something I wanted to bring up.
Also on that note, the Voodoo Donut workers in Portland, who are also organizing through the IWW, one of their big concerns, I believe it was this previous year or the year before in 2020 when we had those big heat waves.
That's right.
They weren't being provided with any kind of necessary or adequate air conditioning. And the same thing is going on with these UPS drivers. I mean, these truck drivers having to work in either really, really freezing cold temperatures, but in many situations, many hot temperatures as well. And those vans don't have adequate AC.
Yeah, I'd just like to observe that a lot of the problems in modern workplaces these days are the workers' environment. And if you don't get a chance to go to the bathroom, you know, and if you're a part of a new wave of Taylorism, and Taylorism refers to the old Ford Motor Company who hired a guy who was an efficiency expert. He was the guy who walked around and measured everybody's jobs with a stopwatch. Well, there's a new version of that happening now, so that every moment of your work day is monitored somehow. And UPS has cameras in the vans. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not for looking at the outside the dash, like you see in Russia with all those crazy accidents and stuff. No, it's to look at the employees and see how, and if you've got to carry around a urinal bottle in your van in order to make your schedule, that's inhumane, in my view. And so this new Taylorism also extends to the coffee shop world, to all kinds of industries, and it's like a rebirth of the old turn of the 20th century.
Piecework.
Yes, the efficiency experts. They weren't there. They were there to maximize profit. People thought at one point, he's measuring my work time. This is a good thing. Mm-hmm. It'll show how to make things more efficient and easier for me. Didn't work that. It was weaponized mm-hmm. and made to fire workers and made
everybody suffer. Yeah, and they beat the productivity drum.
Exactly.
Sean, you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah, what's the difference between the Teamsters Union and the IWW?
So the Teamsters organizes across a handful of trades, whereas the IWW, of course, organizes across any and all industries. The Teamsters Union is, I believe, just about as old as our union as well, but they are a trade union, so they really go for things like for organizing within specific crafts that they organize. They very much focus on contract-related organizing rather than solidarity unionism, which in the IWW, solidarity unionism is more about empowering rank-and-file workers to take direct action on the job and to act as a unified workforce to address any grievances that can come up at any time by the workforce itself. Mm-hmm. So these kinds of strikes typically do occur not as often as they used to, even within the trade unions, but to see one this big, potentially involving 200,000 plus workers, with the support of a union president that is much more militant than the union presidents of these past couple decades, it seems to be a development in the right direction.
I'd just like to observe that the Teamsters Union has long had difficulties with internal problems and with seemingly caving into management in certain places. But this recent election of the Teamsters Union actually overturned the old regime, and a large part of the slate from Teamsters for a Democratic Union, which has been around for 15 years at least, you know, they're a minority portion of that large union, and they've been trying to get things democratized. Well, that's slate one, and so we're beginning to see, I think, some of the reforms that those people are bringing in.
Absolutely. And that whole democratic unionism model, which is something that we've been doing since 1905, it really seems to be taking grassroots foothold in a lot of these other major trade unions as well.
And I wanted to point out, Sean, that one of the historical facts about trade or craft unions versus industrial unionism is that the trade or craft unions evolved with somewhat approval of management because they saw that they could put one worker against another worker. And so it split solidarity versus industrial unionism.
Absolutely. Yeah. But this seems to be, I mean, this could potentially end up being a huge strike. And like fellow worker Gordon said, a lot of this isn't just over wage increases. It is actually about the working conditions. And that is a fantastic place to organize because there are plenty of industries, union and not union, that do pay well or do offer a lot of workers comp in a lot of their contracts. But on the other hand, when it comes to working conditions, addressing those can be a bit of a slower process because that would require getting management to actually divert more money into the capital that they own themselves, which in a lot of cases they don't want to do because then it would increase things like the rates in which they're taxed or how much more money they have to invest in their physical environment, which would require, you know, bettering the way that they uphold environmental regulations and workplace safety regulations. So it's actually, it tends to be pretty costly for the employer, but in terms of worker safety, it's worth every penny. So yeah, a lot of these UPS drivers and their package handlers as well have to deal with these environments, which tend to be dangerous or tend to be very uncomfortable at least. And so that really does rile up workers pretty quickly. You can be pretty content with the pay that you're given as long as you're making, you know, paycheck to paycheck and you're able to live.
You're not being killed on the job. That helps too. Right.
Yes, that's the other part, you know. If you have to go into a workplace every day that lacks adequate AC or has cameras that surveil your every movement while you're on the job or some other kind of, you know, tracking technology that's becoming popular in a lot of industries, that's going to radicalize people pretty quick. Yes, fellow worker?
And I believe that OSHA has been severely weakened during the time of COVID.
Yes.
And I don't really know whether it's going to be able to come back or with just that area, but that was ominous.
Absolutely. Yeah, especially when it comes to the COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of companies were pretty slow to really adequately address people's healthcare-related needs and also PPE, protective equipment needs on the
job. Yeah, it became a joke when they called you an essential worker.
Mm-hmm.
Essential, but not for safety.
There we go. Yeah, you're essential for the development of capital, and if you get sick, well, you're kind of on your own.
Fellow worker Gordon, I thought you were going to bring up, when we were talking about working conditions in the heat wave, I thought you were going to bring up some of the conditions of the, quote, guest workers working in the farms, that we've had many instances where people have collapsed or even died from excessive heat because they weren't allowed to take breaks.
Well, thanks for reminding me, because I think we talked about that a little bit last broadcast, but it's an ongoing situation. IWW in our Whatcom Skagit branch up in Bellingham has long been working with the farm workers up there who pick berries and most recently harvest the flowers, the decorative flowers that you get in a flower shop, daffodils, carnations, roses, all these wonderful flowers. Somebody has to pick them. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to harvest them.
There's a current unionization battle and labor struggle with Ostrom mushrooms.
Really?
Because it's unsafe. The floors where they do the work, they're raised indoors, they get very slippery and wet, and they don't have enough workers or allow enough time to keep the floors clean so that people don't slip and get injured.
That's a perfect example of hazardous workplace.
Yeah.
And what I was going to conclude that little announcement with is that Familias Unidas por la Justicia is the farm workers union for those industries up there in Whatcom and Skagit counties, Bellingham and Mount Vernon specifically, and they had actually gone hat in hand to the United Farm Workers that we all remember from the glory days of the Great Boycott and Dolores Huerta and Cesar Chavez coming in and organizing those farm workers. This happened, you know, what, in the 1960s and 70s, right? They won their battles. They managed to get all kinds of reform in the labor laws, but this little ragtag group of farm workers up there, who, by the way, were mostly indigenous. They're from Mexico or from Central America, but they're indigenous-speaking peoples. They don't necessarily even speak Spanish. So they were being taken advantage of. And when they went to the UFW, the UFW looked at the situation, made its analysis, said, nah, there's just too few of you. Mm-hmm. And so a big union like that, unless they can see breaking even as far as collecting dues and organizing, they're not going to help you. So IWW and that core group founded their own union.
Good.
By golly. And IWW did not need to have a part of that except solidarity.
Absolutely.
That was our payoff, you know. And to see these and whole families with little ones and grandmas and grandpas, it was very heartening. And so they made their own union, and we didn't get a piece of it or representation. But guess what? When IWW up in Bellingham called for picket lines at a certain venue that they were picketing, guess who showed up? A bunch of folks from Familias Unidas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called solidarity.
Yes.
And that's what we work for.
Yeah, and to kind of close off this section, it is important that even though we have different concepts of unionism here in the IWW, that we do support those workers where the rank and file does stand up, where they do demand better of the bureaucratic management of the union, as well as demand better from their bosses. So in this situation, of course, when it comes to working conditions, we absolutely have solidarity with those who do work in environments that are difficult to work in, unsafe to work in, mm-hmm. or are just becoming more and more surveilled by the day. Mm-hmm. All solidarity to the UPS workers, and we hope to see you on the picket line. So now, to talk a little bit more about labor history, this previous weekend, many of you probably went out and had a barbecue or went to the park to go celebrate Labor Day. Labor Day has been a long time historic holiday in the United States that usually celebrates the productivity and the achievements of American workers. For a very long time, it's been the cornerstone of celebrating labor history. However, our Labor Day here in the United States takes place in the first weekend of September. But around the world, it's a very different picture. Many workers' rights organizations and unions and fellow friends of the working class have celebrated a Workers' Day on the 1st of May, known as May Day. The reason why this is different in the United States is it happened a very long time ago that we used to have a May 1st celebration of working people and of the labor movement. It was originally centered around the Marxist International, which first gathered on the 1st of May or around that time and proposed the 8-hour workday, along with what was known in the U.S. as the Haymarket Affair, which was a large scandal that occurred in Chicago in 1886. What basically happened, to give you a very brief rundown, is that there was a large demonstration for workers' rights in the 8-hour day in Chicago around that time, with about 40 to 50,000 people in attendance. And during that march that had several local labor speakers, somebody had planted a bomb which injured and killed several people, as an immediate result of which the Chicago police began to crack down on labor organizers and labor supporters, and 8 men were arrested for supposedly starting a riot and conducting the bombing themselves, even though they were helping lead that day's events, and there was virtually no violence occurring during it. So those 8 people were arrested. A couple of them were acquitted. One of them took their own life in prison. And in the end, 4 people who had little to no connection to what happened that day were executed. And even the governor at the time, Richard J. Ogild, actually pardoned the remaining defendants and criticized the trial afterwards, saying that it was basically a sham trial and that they never caught the actual culprits. Some people have suspected that it was the police themselves trying to disrupt the labor movement in that city. In the following years, the 1st of May, which is when this Haymarket Affair demonstration began, was often held as a Labor Day to commemorate the quote-unquote Haymarket martyrs and also to commemorate the working class and the labor movement in this country.
Well, and worldwide, because mm-hmm. May 1st was the International Labor Day.
Right.
We were in solidarity with people all around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we basically had, like you said, we had solidarity with working class movements all around the world that was centered around this one day. And that was upheld until, I believe it was Grover Cleveland that actually created a separate holiday to be federally recognized in the first weekend of September in order to intentionally distance the labor movement in the United States from more radical demonstrations and organizations, and I'm using radical in quotation marks here, that were advocating for an 8-hour workday, better wages, better workplace protections, things like that. So we eventually kind of created our own labor identity and labor day in this country in order to deflect from the fact that the United States government murdered 4 people for a crime that they didn't commit, and to try and center the labor movement as kind of this patriotic holiday that has specifically occurred within this country rather than an international solidarity movement that took place all over the world earlier in the year. So It's a pretty fascinating history. I'm just going over a very surface-level description of it. But since the mid-1950s, the United States has celebrated Loyalty Day and Law Day on May the 1st, celebrating loyalty to the United States and law and order on the same day.
As well, that's downright cute, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And again, that was kind of like the last stone put on this wall that separated the traditional labor movement, which oriented itself towards May Day and more radical movements, versus a more watered-down version of it in the United States that takes place in the first weekend of September.
You know what that's reminding me of? I'm sorry, but I gotta say it.
No, go ahead. This is open table discussion.
We had Armistice Day, and the U.S. government had to switch it to Veterans Day and change the whole focus and tone of it from celebrating the end of war to celebrating warlike behavior.
Right. To make people into heroes, essentially, and to kind of put a thin veneer of glamorization on it.
Well, the gig is World War II came along.
Yeah.
And suddenly, the armistice didn't mean anything anymore, and now we're getting people being shipped home in body bags, so we better make a new holiday, because there ain't no armistice anymore.
Yep. And pretty much since then, we've always been in a continuous state of war anyway, so what armistice is there to celebrate? Although one could say the same thing about the class war that's taking place all over the world between the working class and the owning class. But in this country, we've kind of developed this own distinct holiday and this own distinct form of celebration in terms of how we view our labor history. And I think it's important to remember that, even though the weekend is already past us, that there is an international movement around the world to support the working class, and that they do have their own holiday, and that their demands are definitely more encompassing of what workers around the world really want, which is the democratization of their workplaces, an end to the wage system, so on and so forth. Yes, fellow worker Gordon?
So the ironic note here is that the impetus for May Day as an international workers' holiday was caused in America.
Mm-hmm.
And America is one of the few nations that do not observe May Day as the international workers' holiday.
Figures.
Right.
It figures. Now, this year, Lynn and I both went and we honored Labor Day by going to Ralph Chaplin's gravesite here in Tacoma. Some of you may know that Ralph Chaplin was the person who wrote the song Solidarity Forever.
Mm-hmm.
And traditionally, people in the labor movement have gone out to the gravesite. The Pierce County Central Labor Council goes, and we sing some of Ralph's songs, and we honor the work that he did and the work that people have done all along to give us the eight-hour day, to give us decent working conditions. And then after that celebration, and it's for the curious listener, Ralph Chaplin is buried at Calgary Cemetery here in Tacoma. You can look it up.
He's a local labor hero.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, Labor Council usually has a gigantic picnic in Stillicum. And what I did is I figured that was an ideal time to get signatures for Whole Washington and also to get signatures for Home in Tacoma for All.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very fertile crowd there, and I didn't even have to ask. People were tapping me on the shoulder, coming up and saying, can I sign?
Mm-hmm.
So I got pages and pages, and I felt really good about that, and ate a hot dog for Ralph and and came back home. So that was today's. There wasn't a march here in Tacoma. In past years, we have had marches.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we'll have them again as the labor unions and the movement gets stronger. And it will.
Absolutely. Yes, Lynn?
And that event on Monday was just really terrific. I've been to several years of it, as has Marilyn. And it was just really, really well organized as far as the speakers. And some were spontaneous and some were scheduled. But a lot of the older folks in Pierce County or Tacoma area that have been active and trying for justice and for the working class, and like people like Dr. Magden and just many, many leaders. And it's just very inspiring when they stand up and say something. Some of them can't even stand up. You know, they have to be helped.
Yeah.
But these people are steadfast and inspirational still.
It is a nice mix of young and old together.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even though we have our own little labor celebration here in the United States, it is good to know that even on Labor Day, there is still a celebration of labor in this country. And while we wish it was more oriented towards more of an international coalition of working class organizations, that we still have the opportunity to celebrate it in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Well said. Another thing is that day, a guy that we never had heard of, I forget his name though, it was like one name, but he showed up and he had a song that he'd written that was hilarious and really right on. And I don't remember what it was about, but anyway, I can play a little bit.
It was about being a spaceman.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was about, in the future, what it was like to be a worker in space.
That's right. He went like every 10 years or so.
Yeah,
really cool. Well, anyway, he was quite talented, and he knew all the words, and he was very animated.
So he needs one of my bumper stickers that says, "This machine kills fascists." You know, that was on Woody Guthrie's.
You need to sign that guy up.
Absolutely.
I invited him to IWW.
Yeah, he's interesting.
Yeah, so wherever you celebrate May Day or Labor Day, we hope that you had a good previous weekend, and hopefully we'll see you on the 1st of May next year as well. You know, it's always good to look back on our labor history and remember, you know, what people have done in order to make sure that we do have nice things like the 8-hour day or better working conditions or better wages, because it wasn't given to us voluntarily by the bosses.
And the end of child labor.
And the end of child labor and so many other things that we've had to literally fight and die for in this country.
Still fighting for pay equity.
Yeah. Absolutely. And yeah. So please, you know, do whatever labor history research that you can. It's a fascinating volume of American history, and we hope to see you, whether it's on the 1st of May or on next year's Labor Day. And now for the next section of our labor education piece here on WOB Radio. I've been covering the AEIOU steps of organizing that are commonly used to help guide workers to getting a union in their workplace. AEIOU is short for agitation, education, inoculation, organization, and then unionization. And the next piece that we're going to be talking about today, as I covered agitation in the previous episode, if all of you fellow listeners tuned in, today we're going to be talking a bit more about education. So when we talk about education and labor organizing, as I said previously, agitation is more about getting workers to think about what kinds of problems that they have in the workplace, the kind of collective struggles that they face in terms of wages, hours, conditions, and any other situation about their employment that they don't necessarily like or that make their lives worse in some cases. When it comes to education, that's where a fellow worker, an organizer essentially, can talk to coworkers about what they can do in order to directly address these workplace grievances. This usually involves talking about strategizing, you know, what can we do with what workers we have on board? How do we get more workers on board with potentially taking collective action in the future? How to have one-on-one conversations with fellow workers? How to discuss workplace-related issues without getting on the boss's radar, so on and so forth. So basically, the whole goal of this is to essentially get people thinking, well, I already know what problems I have in the workplace, so what can I actually meaningfully do about them? A lot of education tends to center around those one-on-one conversations that I mentioned earlier, talking about different options for direct action. But another big part of it, which will tie into inoculation later, is kind of informing your coworkers that it's not an entirely hopeless situation, that there have been plenty of countless historical and local examples about how when workers get together to address their issues on the job, that there have been tried and true strategies, which could include things like literally marching on your boss with a collection of your coworkers to kind of directly confront them about the issues that they're facing in the workplace. Smaller steps might include things like a petition, whether it's email or online or in person, to kind of get things changed in the workplace, to kind of essentially teach people how to collectively organize and act. Of course, that also goes along with what I said earlier about having conversations with your coworkers, and now talking about educating your coworkers through taking the direct action itself, kind of learning through play, essentially. So that's definitely a big key part of organizing. Do any of you have any thoughts on that by chance?
Just a quick example of being able to take direct action on part of the workers themselves. Let's say that you know that you're working in a section of a shop, doesn't matter what they're making, but that particular section might not be close to a fire exit, might have flammable materials in there. So you ask the boss, hey boss, we need a fire extinguisher in here because of the reasons, you know, we have flammable stuff flying around. And the boss will shine you on, yeah, okay, well, we'll look into it. We'll get with the safety committee.
Yeah, right.
Well, if the workers get together and just say, hey, this is too dangerous, let's all chip in, and everybody buys one of them $35 fire extinguishers and sticks it up on the wall, that's direct action. And the next time that the foreman or the supervisor comes through, they're going to see that fire extinguisher. They might even get mad about it. Mm-hmm. They might even want you to take it down because they didn't authorize it. But guess what? It's your co-workers, your fellow workers on the shop floor who did this for safety. And it's a telling thing. It's a small victory, but it changes people's minds. Well, I remember when we got that done, maybe something bigger, like a bigger safety concern, or our hours or something like that. We could take more direct action.
Right. There's a lot of educational capacity in taking direct action on the workplace because it is literally showing your coworkers it doesn't have to be like this and that you do have that collective power to directly address grievances on the job.
You're not powerless.
Yes. Of course, in terms of having those kinds of conversations, I think a lot of people who do work on the educational aspect of organizing their workplace also kind of have to stress that as well. The education of you are not powerless if we all work together. Because I think a lot of people who really do struggle in their workplaces with the kind of working conditions or pay that they get, it's very easy to subscribe to the mindset of, well, they're my boss, they have the position of power in the workplace, it doesn't seem like too many people are interested in collectively organizing.
It ain't necessarily so.
Exactly. So I think a lot of those education conversations also do have to center around the idea of just encouraging people to come out of their bubble a bit and going, well, no, actually, this is the situation that you have to face for half of your life. What can you do about it?
Get them to think
of the solution.
I am thinking of Country Joe and the Fish, and the young listener probably doesn't know who the hell that is. But he started a very famous song with some letters. Mm-hmm. And in terms of what we're talking about here today, Noah, I'm going to say to the group, give me an A.
A.
Agitate. Give me an E.
E.
With, educate.
Yeah, educate.
Give me an I.
I.
Inoculate. Give me an O.
O.
Organize.
Give me that U.
Unionize. Exactly. This is one of those big steps in order to get a union in your workplace, and that is the ultimate goal of educating your coworkers about what you can do. Get them to get out of that bubble of, well, I'm helpless. You're not really helpless. And if we all joined in a chance like that on the workplace, maybe we'd be a little bit less helpless. But yeah, so definitely look into different educational strategies. As always, at the ends of these sections, I'd like to remind the fellow listener that the Industrial Workers of the World has a fantastic workers' education program called the Organizing Training, the OT. If you would like to become a member of the IWW and take this training so you can learn how to organize your workplace, you can reach out at IWW.org, or you can reach out to a local branch, such as the Tacoma branch assembled today, and you can figure out a way to get set up with those classes. We offer them in person, finally, again, after COVID, well, quote-unquote after COVID, but we also have online programs as well that allow you to learn how to educate your coworkers better so that you can collectively act in the future. And it's free if you're an IWW member, and I believe even if you aren't an IWW member and you're invited by a branch of the IWW to be part of this organizer training, it is completely covered by the union and is trained by well-educated union people who have been doing this kind of work for a long time. So please feel free to reach out to us and learn how to organize your workplace today. Take it away, fellow worker.
Greetings, fellow workers and listeners to our Wobbly Radio Hour show. And my name is fellow worker Gordon. I'm here with fellow worker Sean. We both live in the Bremerton Port Orchard area. We come into Tacoma so that we can organize with some righteous fellow workers here and to take some of that stuff home to Kitsap County. So what we want to start is a really brief segment on notes for Kitsap County. And I'll start off by saying that we sort of stumbled into each other at a DSA meeting, which is a good place to go if you want to meet, you know, potential fellow workers and radicals. They're not, but, you know, you can meet some. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we found that there's a lot of general interest in our union, so we want to establish IWW interest group out in Kitsap County, and we're taking information, expertise, and literature from a couple of other branches.
Yeah, and so we're working on a campaign to expand the membership in Bremerton Kitsap. And we've recruited a new member, Billy, and we have 5 other FWs interested.
Wow.
Yeah, and last weekend we tabled for about 24 hours at the Bremerton Blackberry Festival.
Really?
In commemoration of Labor Day. And we were telling folks we were trying to make Labor Day every day.
That's a great slogan.
Yeah, and we're giving away empowerment. So we handed out over 1,000 pieces of literature on the whole Washington campaign for Medicare for All, tenants' rights, union rights. We had Wobbly flags up. We had DSA flags up. At one point, we had like 5-6 people deep trying to get information and materials on on Medicare. Mm-hmm. And it was really funny because the Kitsap Democrats had a booth like 100 feet away, and they were charging $3 a pin, and no one was standing there. So the takeaway for us was that solidarity is in the air, and people are hungry for help right now.
Especially in a conservative area like Kitsap County, too. Yeah. It is amazing to see that there is interest in things like Medicare for All, or, you know, the current labor struggles in the United States, and even the IWW. It's fascinating and actually really encouraging to hear that even in a more traditionally conservative pocket like that, that there are plenty of people in the community You know, I kind of hear those conversations in left-wing fields about how, you know, oh, you know, you can't organize in the South. It's all too conservative.
Oh, that's not true.
Or you can't organize in this county because it's all too conservative, or this town, and et cetera, because they're so anti-labor and so anti-progress and so on. But the truth is that there are still people in those communities that are there and really need help. And
people aren't stupid.
Yes.
And when they are being lied to, they will eventually figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so excited about the work that you guys are doing. I want to help.
Oh, thanks.
How many signatures did you end up getting, Sean?
676.
That's a lot.
Oh, that's wow.
Fantastic.
That's over, what, 3 days, right?
Well, yeah.
2.5 days, really.
3 days, pretty
so
much.
So by the time they actually get into the record, because we need 425,000, but we can get there. And they're trying it both ways. You know, they're doing it to get it on the ballot, and they're also doing it legislatively. So I like that they're trying both angles at the same time.
Yeah, and we handed out, a lot of people signed up to volunteer. We handed out a lot of volunteer positions. And I gave my number out to 10 or so people interested in the IWW as well. So
oh, that's great. Great organizing work out there.
Yeah.
And of course, here in the IWW, we're very interested in this, in Medicare for All programs here in the U.S. because we recognize that the way employers give out health care is a way to really kind of clamp down on labor organizing or any kind of agitation, because they could threaten you like they've done with the UPS workers or the Starbucks workers. Well, we'll just take away your health care if you try to organize. Whereas if we had a statewide, in this case, or even a nationwide Medicare for All program, we can detach health care from the workplace so that no matter where we go in our lives and what kind of careers that we're leading, we can still have that blanket of protection.
What? Security?
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, as part of our strategy, if you want to call it that, for forming up an IWW interest group out in Bremerton and Port Orchard, Kitsap County generally, we have found local groups that are taking direct action to help the least of us. Let's put it that way. So we have allied ourselves with a Food Not Bombs outfit out in Bremerton, Kitsap. And what we've done is we've done some simple logistical work, like hauling their gear, hauling the canopies down to where we're working. And where we're working is one of the unhoused people's encampment. And naturally, it's on Martin Luther King Way in Bremerton, which is, you know, about a block and a half long. But that's where the people have been gathering, because they're also right behind the Starvation Army building.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, well, we'll talk about that later. But anyway, we're working with Food Not Bombs. We've established some trust. The guy who joined up, he was a Food Not Bombs guy.
Yep.
He's also helping to organize other things for us, but I'll let Sean take it from here.
Yeah, and so in conjunction with Food Not Bombs, the Washington State Lived Experience Coalition is branching out into Kitsap, and we're assisting them in their organizing efforts. And their whole mission is to empower houseless people and people on the edge of houselessness to get into government and leverage their power and people power and give them a voice to change policy.
Could you name that program one more time?
The Washington State Lived Experience Coalition.
So people who have experienced homelessness.
Okay.
And the idea is get a houseless person who's experienced in onto the city council, so then the city council's more friendly.
So is Bremerton doing sweeps like Tacoma?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. A fellow worker was arrested last week in a sweep.
You had a guy die?
Yeah, we had a guy die.
Yeah. Who's sitting out there with diabetes, untreated diabetes.
Yeah, one of the signs that I carry is without shelter, people die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the truth.
Now, our branch of the IWW here has been taking water out.
We do that.
On the hot weekends.
And clean, serviceable clothing donations.
Yeah.
It's going to be wintertime. The hot item was fresh new socks.
Yeah.
Those are very popular.
Well, I will have to admit that I take a carton of cigarettes out with me. I hand out cigarettes
too. Oh, yeah.
I'm not perfect.
Harm reduction. That's a way to build friendship.
Well, they run a needle exchange too.
Yeah.
So that we've been collecting. Otherwise, these would end up on the street, right?
Right.
So we're collecting used needles in a correct container.
Yeah. I believe the other thing that you folks were doing out in Kitsap County, we're also helping distribute literature.
Yes, indeed.
Right. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so actually, Gordon, why don't you talk about the upcoming concert at the Chuck?
Oh, okay.
Where we're going to be tabling with literature.
Now, this is a little bit out of my field of expertise, because I'm an old rock and roller. That's how old I am. I went to Woodstock. Damage is still showing, but never mind all that. The younger generations have come up, and we have a second-run theater. Used to be a second-run movie house on Callow Avenue, which is kind of like Pawn Shop Street.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and every town's got one. This is ours. And so the second-run movie theater went out of business, and it was taken over by
a couple named Andy and Angel.
Yeah, and they took the venue over, and they turned it into a punk rock concert venue that has been extremely successful.
And Sean, with his silver tongue and persuasive way, went in there and got an opportunity to table some literature and ended up with an open invitation for the IWW to come in and put up a flag, and put up a Black Cat Sable flag in there. And we're getting very well received. Plus, there's another coffee shop down the block who takes copies of the Seattle Worker. We'll give a plug for that later. But also is comfortable with like our little trifold leaflets. They're fine. So we're finding venues. And so one of the guys who, as a matter of fact, the guy who joined up, his name is Billy, and he knows that outfit down there on, they call it the Chuck, Charleston Theater, okay? Mm-hmm. But anyway, he's organizing this concert for us, and we're going to be sort of on the bill. All the proceeds from the gate are going to go to the unhoused people on MLK.
What's the date you have for this concert?
November 12th.
Oh, I've got to write that down.
We haven't got a lineup yet of bands, but we're hoping to see our buddies and fellow workers from down in Olympia, the window-smashing job creators. We hope that they'll show up. And other punk bands I don't even know the names of are turning up. And I'm going to grow my musical experience by handing out literature during concerts.
So just to clarify one more time, can you give us the venue, the day, and the time?
Okay. Don't have a time yet, but it should be...
It'll be about 8. Doors open at 8. And the venue's the Charleston and Bremerton, located at 333 North Callow Avenue.
All right.
North what?
North Callow.
And what day is that again?
November 12th.
November 12th.
And C-A-L-O?
C-A-L-L-O-W.
Right.
It's right on the line in Bremerton.
Yes, he was a lieutenant in the Navy, and they named the street.
All right. And it's going to be punk music?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Pretty rough metal stuff.
They're a family-friendly venue, though, and they have a non-alcoholic section, and all ages are welcome.
All age joint.
I've been there for concerts with families with six-year-olds with big earmuffs on, and it's into death metal, and it's a fun time.
Nice.
And we also have another helper. We'd like to give him a shout-out. His name is Marwan Cameron.
Yeah.
He's agreed to host a donation box for Food Not Bombs clothing donations at his office, which is located at 419 Park Avenue in Bremerton. He also has a podcast that I recommend our listeners look up called The Conduit. You can find it on YouTube. And Marwan has been a gracious host to Gordon and I on several occasions and let us do a whole two-hour show on the IWW.
Wow.
And he's asked us to come back to do a regular labor segment. So check out Marwan Cameron's The Conduit in Bremerton on YouTube. And he's got a whole range of public or worker oriented programming.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really cool. You guys have been making great legwork out there in the Kitsap.
It's all him. He's got the energy. I'm just along for the ride.
Well, thank you, fellow worker Sean and fellow worker Gordon.
What a tag team. You were all just right on it when the other one said the other one's name. It's like,
wait till we do it in English and Russian.
Really good. Sounds like fun. Well, thank you so much for that report, and we certainly hope to see you out at that lovely little punk venue coming up here. Mm-hmm. Could you give that announcement one more time? That location, 8 o'clock at 333 North Callow Avenue, and that's going to be on November the 12th. We hope to see you come out there.
And it's in Bremerton.
And it's in Bremerton. Thank you.
Right when you come cruising into town, you'll hit the main street, which is Callow Avenue, besides the downtown area. Don't turn right. Keep going straight, and the venue will be on your left.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much to the both of you for that report, and we certainly hope to hear more from you in the future.
So this is Marilyn, and I'm going to do the environmental report, but before I do that, I am going to trace back just a little bit, take a little bit of time on incarcerated workers' information. And this is just a shout-out. I was reading my Yes magazine on labor issues this month, and they had a little section called The Page That Counts. It's numerical. So we've talked about the only place where slavery is officially okay in our system.
State sanctioned in our system, absolutely.
Yes, is with people that are in prison. So here's the numbers. Numbers of incarcerated workers in the United States prison system, almost 800,000. Share of these workers who say they will face punishment, including solitary confinement and loss of family visitation, if they refuse to work, 76%. Average hourly range of incarcerated workers, 13 to 52 cents per hour. Share of this wage taken by prisons to cover fines, taxes, restitution, and other fees like phones, up to 80%. Value of goods and services generated by incarcerated workers, over $8 billion a year. Number of the 100 largest American private defense contractors that profit from incarcerated workers, 37 out of 100. share of the 25 largest American arms manufacturers that profit from incarcerated workers. Are you ready for this? 64%. So just think about that.
That's cents. That was not a typo. That's like 15 to 52 cents an hour.
Right. And this information is from the ACLU, and this is in Yes Magazine, which I highly recommend. So now we're going to switch to the environment. And fellow worker Noah talked about the UPS strike and how it would affect, I think you said 9%?
I believe it was 6 to 7% of the United States GDP is contingent on.
So here's the scoop. The railroad workers have been trying to negotiate a contract for over 2 years. This is mostly on the East Coast, but it could spread. The problem is, there are many problems, but the NLRB has nothing to do with railroad workers because, well, first I want to take you back. The last strike of railroad workers was 30 years ago, and they are not governed by the NLRB. They are a private for-profit industry. The last time they were nationalized was under Wilson, believe it or not. And when they did surveys and polls back then, they found out that most of the workers liked being nationalized. But no, they were privatized. The situation that they've got in terms of environment is over 90% of the railroad workers are divorced because their hours are so chaotic and confusing that they cannot maintain relationships and families. There is no stability, even when they're off work. They can be called in at any time. They have no paid holidays. They have terrible working conditions. Now, they have been traditionally, A, they're not under the NLRB. B, the way that they're organized makes it very difficult for them to strike. And they were organized in the craft and trade tradition. They had the engine operators and they had the
firemen, conductors. Yeah.
But for the past several years, dissatisfaction has been growing at such a rate, and they've been trying and trying and trying to get a contract, and it can take forever because of the system they've got is completely different than the one that most of us work under. So now they have finally gotten to the point where industrial unionism within the railroad workers is actually getting an 80% approval rating.
Really?
And they've come up under a new name, and it's United Railroad Workers. So keep your eye on that. Their cutoff date, because they're threatening a strike too, is September 16th. Keep your eyes open. Keep your ears open. Watch for what happens. It will be difficult for them to do a strike because of the laws that they have to operate under. But with UPS and with the railroads, that only leaves the pitiful little truckers. And I think the power of this, even the power of a threat, is going to have ripple effects throughout the United States. We as consumers, although I don't like to think of myself as a consumer, will be affected. But if it results in better working conditions, more humane working conditions, I think it's our duty to support this. And in terms of environment also, you have to understand that if the trains run with goods and services, that's CO2 that's not being released by all those extra trucks. So this is an environmental issue. And I wanted to bring that up. Discussion.
How many people do you think, just off the top of your head, would run a freight train that may be 100 cars long? We've all seen them.
Right,
you know,
right.
How many people do you think crew a train like that?
Well, I know that they've been getting rid of workers. And so that's part of the problem, because they've gotten rid of so many workers, and they've actually closed different rail lines because they weren't profitable enough for the so-called owners, who, by the way, are making record profits. Record profits.
It's a multi-billion dollar industry.
Yeah. They're making, and look at all the concessions they got from the U.S. government, all the land they were given, all of that stuff. So,
well, to answer my own rhetorical question, it's three people. Three people from the engine to the caboose run that whole train. So three-person crew, and the railroads are trying to cut it down to two.
Right, and it becomes unsafe.
Exactly.
Right, people are falling asleep.
Yep.
And talking about surveillance, they are being surveilled.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they're stopped at a station and they're not supposed to be actively working, they're getting dinged and criticized and penalties if they dare to relax or read a book or something when they're stopped at a station.
Mm-hmm.
So the situations have become intolerable. People who used to be railroad lifers, you signed up and you worked your whole life because the pay was good. And
a there separate was, retirement.
They had, and there was a certain amount of pride in the work.
Yes.
That is getting totally negated and people are walking away from it. Mm-hmm. And it's a sad situation. So September 16th, and if that happens, hallelujah.
To tie this to one of your environmental issues that is dear to your heart,
The oil and chemical trains.
Oil and chemical cars that come right through downtown Tacoma and other downtown Olympias, too.
Remember the town in Canada, the Maganda, that was incinerated?
It was a French name, Lac...
Lac du...
I can't speak French, unfortunately, but it was a town in Quebec.
Yeah.
And it full of oil cars.
I think it was Megantic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Megantic.
Yeah.
All right.
But they were incinerated. There was nobody to find.
Right.
Go ahead.
Any word on what the ILWU is going to do? Because, I mean, the ships, we're talking about trains polluting, those container ships, in 1 hour can probably spew more diesel, carbon from bunker oil than any one of us can do in our entire lifetime. And if they could go on strike and stop the ports...
Well, I know that the longshore in some ports is supporting this.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
So it varies a lot from local to local, because ILWU can be really radical, but it can also be... In some locals, kind of conservative.
In Tacoma here, they've done some wonderful things. Mm-hmm. But they want their bread and butter.
Yep. You can't ask workers to sacrifice that unless they know what the score is.
Yeah, go ahead.
And also, the driving down staffing issues and working longer hours, that's standard stuff from the capitalist playbook that's been going on since time immemorial now.
Yeah.
So it happens in every industry, too.
And then the surveillance stuff, Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's tyranny.
So they've ruined... What so was a good job?
Yeah.
And people are attempting to get back their sense of dignity and honor in work.
And it definitely ties back to the original issue of, on one hand, the work environment. We're having smaller numbers of employees, having to do more, having to work in a dangerous environment. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, we have the fact that a lot of these railway systems transport petroleum products, transport raw coal. There have been spills and explosions related to that. However, on the talking specifically about the shipping industry versus the train transportation, the other thing, too, is that, train transportation is somewhat more environmentally friendly as a mode of transportation.
Well, and trains can be electrified.
Yes, that's the other thing. So if we, if the companies were more willing to invest in their workers, including the workers that do maintenance to these railway lines and maintenance to the engines themselves, if the workers could green that industry, you would have a industry that doesn't pollute that much compared to other modes of transportation like trucking and shipping, and you could also potentially green that industry if the workers stood up for it as well.
You know what Jim Hightower would call the owners, don't you?
What would he call them?
He would call them greed heads.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slackers.
That seems like a fascinating situation. And again, it's one of those intersections where work environment and the environment in general kind of come hand in hand in terms of
struggles.
It's a good
time to be an organizer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and capitalism and destroying the environment go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. It's always gone hand in hand.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think we did a shout out to the teachers in Seattle that are on strike.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us for the environmental section. I guess, as part of conclusion or general housekeeping, any shout outs anybody wants to give?
I want to shout out to the Seattle and I think the Federal Way teachers that are on strike.
Absolutely.
May they win their strike.
Kent was one of them, I think.
Pardon?
Kent was one of them.
Was Kent one too?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll definitely have to cover them in the next labor notes in our next episode. We're going to be talking a little bit more about the teacher strikes to give it a little bit more time to do more research on what's been going on with them and hopefully any developments that come up. But all solidarity to the teachers that are out on strike here in the Puget Sound. Thank you for coming out on Labor Day to whatever celebration was happening in your town or your community to remember labor history and the people that have fought to make sure that this country is good for the working class. And while there is still a lot of work in that regards to do, it's still important to take a moment to remember what's been done and what we look forward to.
And for those of you that were interested in the facts and figures that I read about incarcerated workers, keep in mind that a general strike is still being planned across the country by our incarcerated fellow workers and jailhouse lawyers speak. The IWW would be in solidarity with them. and we will keep you updated on progress on that.
And finally, as one more reminder to the punk event that's going to be taking place up in Bremerton, that's going to be taking place at 8 p.m. on 333 North Callow Avenue in Bremerton. That's going to be on November the 12th, and there's going to be plenty of wobs, plenty of fellow workers, and plenty of good bands playing that evening. So we hope to see you up there.
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, yep, 8 p.m. Aside from that, solidarity forever, and thank you so much for joining our episode.
Solidarity forever.
Solidarity.
Solidarity forever.